are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
He's the absolute wrong guy that you would not want to be in the wrong mood and accidentally, slap him in the face or something.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Ryan Braun never really was outraged by what was going on, and that was a sign that something really had happened there.
Obviously something had happened. The dude got, a FedEx employee fired.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
When they're of the persuasion that Taiwan Walker is.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
I should have probably left it alone, too. Yeah. But
we are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 335 of Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I'm pretty excited about this sort of pilot episode that we have here because upcoming in the season, I have the great fortune of being able to host a podcast with Andrew Dewhurst and Justin Mason, and they're with us right now. How are you fellows doing?
Doing well, Chuck.
I'm feeling a little awkward not being in the host chair.
I decided that I was going to announce Justin today as our normal lead point guard because I made this analogy to Justin last year that hosting a podcast is kind of like being a point guard. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to come in with points when you here and there, but most importantly, you want to dish off to your expert analysts and make sure that they score their points. So that's kind of how I look at it overall. I do think this is not only a wonderful chance because Justin adds the ultimate legitimacy to any broadcast. So Andrew and I know, are both exceptionally excited to be working with him. But I'm really excited about Andrew being on a regular podcast. Will this be the first regular podcast that you're on for FWFB, Andrew?
Outside of my own, yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, because you're doing the hockey. Are you doing a hockey podcast?
That's right, yep.
Yeah, Andrew is our hockey expert, which I think adds a really wonderful extra advantage of following FWFB because I know I have multiple hockey fans. Wisconsin is a weird hockey area because college hockey is big here, but we do not have an NHL team. Although I have been to a Blackhawks game, so I've touched on it a little bit, and a Tampa Bay Lightning game for that matter. Anyway, yeah. Andrew, why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what your where you can be reached and exactly what you think we're gonna excited you are about this venture we got going here.
Yeah, you can find me at on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. I'm elated to have such esteemed panelists as yourself, Chuck and Justin, and looking forward to talking to you guys every week about baseball and whatever else other baseball related things come up.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do kind of a philosophical approach to this. We're going to have a concept that I throw out there each week, and then I'm going to attach some player evaluations and talk about how these players relate to the concept that we're going to speak of that day. So, Justin, why don't you tell us which moniker you would like to be attached to today as far as which outlet we should reach you at, etc.
Well, you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can find my work just about everywhere. But most importantly, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, where, I own the joint and do a bunch of podcasts and write things and run the staff and all that great stuff. But you can find all my other work on Twitter. I tweet it out.
It's funny that you're talking about being in the sort of the shooting guard chair now. Instead of being the point guard or the host. And the last time I heard you on a podcast, it was actually one that you were producing for Fangraphs, and they were actually, on occasion, were asking you about stuff instead of asking you about each topic that came up, which was odd for me because, I'm used to you adding points to everything. So, but that was interesting. But that's a star-studded cast that you're with over on Fangraphs as well, so that's good stuff. All right, well, the concept that we're going to look at today is about stat targeting, which for those of you out there who may not have heard of it, for years people got ready for fantasy drafts by looking at what stat numbers they needed to accumulate in all the categories for rotisserie leagues. And that's gotten to be more and more difficult in recent years. Some of it just because of trends within the game, and some of it because they switched to hitting a super ball last year instead of hitting a baseball. All right, well, it's a slight exaggeration, but it was definitely a juiced up ball. So my concept is that I believe that stat targeting is now an extinct and outdated draft strategy because of the huge swings from year to year in power, stolen bases, and strikeouts. And I'm going to throw it at Andrew first, and I gave him a couple days to stew on this. So what do you think about this concept? Have you done this before?
I have. I mean, I think the argument to be made here is that it's probably always been extinct. Targeting stats was probably, if it's something you've done, was probably always the wrong thing to follow. I mean, I think the right thing to be doing, especially this time of year, is trying to identify the trends and following the trends into the next year to try to identify where the game's going each year, right? We saw, as you noted, we saw a big uptick in home runs last year. I think it was up over 10%. And as we see home runs go up, we see that the way the games are managed, we see steals for the most part go down. I think that's the important thing to be keeping in mind is not how many total home runs do I need next year or how many strikeouts do I need to get? But when do I need to get them in my drafts and where do I need to be keeping an eye out for those to come from?
Yeah, I mean, that's seems like a fairly sensible approach. I'm wondering if Justin, in his years of roto, has used this strategy before, and if you agree with me that it seems to be getting a little trickier over time.
Well, I think the issue with stat targeting, as you call it, is more of a matter of how you do it, as opposed to whether or not it is still a viable strategy. Because I think if you do it correctly, I think you can still do it. When you stat target, it should be based on the current year's projections, whatever projections you're using. So if you're going back to previous seasons and looking at your leagues and taking averages of like the last three seasons, then yes, you're making a mistake aiming for those stat levels. What you should be doing is figuring out the projections of the, you know, what you would expect the players to be taken in your league, averaging those up and figuring out what each team would average if they were completely spread fairly across the board, and then figure out what you would need to finish second or third in every category. That's a fair way of doing it. The easier way of doing it is getting draft software that you can get over at like Baseball HQ or RotoWire. I've used the RotoWire software for many years. Mike Warner's a big Baseball HQ guy. He is the RotoLab software. And they will calculate in draft where they project your standings to be and your totals to be. And keeping targets based on that, I think, is still very viable. Because if you're working off projections, then that's what you believe is going to happen or close to what is going to happen. I do my own projections and I even put them into the software. But some people just like to use their regular stat providers, you know, whoever that may be, projections. But if you're doing it based on previous year's standings, I think that's where you're going to be making a mistake because like Chuck mentioned and Andrew mentioned, there's been a massive variance year to year on certain statistics, and I think it's going to be harder and harder to predict, especially because we don't know what Major League Baseball is going to do with the balls, if anything. They may just go, hey, we like this offensive explosion. We're going to keep it as is. Or they may say, hey, we need to tone it down a notch and figure out a way to make the ball not fly out of the park so much. It should be based on projections, and if it is, I have no problem with it.
Yeah, and to your point, Justin, as well, I think it's worth noting the great things about some of the work that you've already done and what's happening at Fangraphs is that we now have 15-team projections, right? We've got the Mason mocks out there, and Fangraphs is already starting to put up streamer and depth charts projections for next year. So
Zips is almost done as well. So I mean, yeah, if you're going to use like projections, I don't think there's anything wrong with attempting to do it that way. I would recommend going and getting draft software. Like I said, you know, from one of those places like RotoWire or Baseball HQ, because it can be very, very difficult to do that process on your own. You know, and the draft software is pretty affordable. So I think it's worth going out and get there, especially if you have a home live league. But in terms of, I think what Chuck was mentioning as a traditional concept, because that's something I used to do. I used to go back to my previous year's standings and go, okay, this is what I need in this category. This is what I need in that category. This is what I need in this category. And then I would try to hit those marks based on projections in draft. I don't think you can do that anymore. I think you need to do it comparatively speaking to the rest of the league.
I would also say that I think you guys are making great points on this. I mean, every once in a while, you know, you're going to run into an opportunity where, you know, you got a day or a day and a half to get ready for a draft. I'm a big live draft guy. I know Darius, our friend Darius, because of being over in England, he doesn't have these local drafts where, you know, 10, 12, 14 guys get together in a room and, you know, and pound out a draft, you know, and it's live and everybody's drinking and giving each other a hard time. I mean, that was the initial hook into fantasy baseball for me, is that draft day was like one of the best days of the year because, you know, you're sitting around with your buddies, you're giving each other a hard time, et cetera, and so forth. But the one thing about live drafting is that you do, and the virtue of stat targeting that made really good sense is that we all have natural tendencies as to how we draft players. My natural tendency is always to draft players that were good in all the categories. I'm drafting as many people that are five category that are going to help me in all the different categories as possible. Well, sometimes you can get overboard on one of the categories or another of the categories, meaning that you get three quarters of the way through the draft and you don't really have as much speed as you thought you had or as much as you wanted, etc. And that's where I think this, you know, and you guys can speak to this. I've never used the software that you guys are speaking of. I think that that's where either the software or the targeting comes in, because if you're accumulating, if you're doing a running list of your stolen bases or your home runs that you have through your projections or the software, then all of a sudden you can say to yourself in the middle of the draft, boy, I need to take some flyers on cheap speed, or I need to take, you know, I need to look at the bottom end first baseman, you know, the Mike Napolis of the world that could explode for 25 or 30 home runs and help me catch up in the home run category. You know, you guys can speak to this as well. The other issue that you run into is that we're talking about home runs and stolen bases, but you also need to try and accumulate good batting average guys. You need to, some of them use, you know, OPS, etc. So I'm curious, Justin, do you think there's a big difference between the counting categories and the percentage categories for this kind of a qualification too, isn't there?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I talk about it all the time. One of my favorite and most popular strategies that I employ in your traditional 5x5 league is to punt the batting average category, because it is a huge amount of variance year to year. I mean, you know, I used to use Todd Frazier. He's not a great example anymore because he's not very good anymore. But, I mean, his batting average, you know, went back and forth year after year, and people would be projecting him to hit like 250 or 270, and there's no rhyme or reason to what he was doing and why his averages, you know, a lot of things go into why averages can be very fluky, you know, and of course there's obviously guys that kind of buck that trend. I mean, Adam Jones has been had a very sticky average year to year, but for the most part, I throw out average, or at least I devalue it in my evaluations, and I'll kind of punt it because I figure, you know, while everybody's chasing batting average and paying up a little bit more, I can kind of discount it and dominate, try to dominate the other categories, which are a little bit easier to project.
Yeah, I think there's some punting strategy in general for all fantasy sports because mm-hmm. Of the three-sport league, et cetera. Basketball is a big punt category sport. And I do think the biggest key when talking about that to me is that when you're punting it, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to avoid it altogether.
Well, and that's the thing about punting average. It's not the same thing as punting saves or punting home runs or punting stolen bases. You're not agreeing that, or you're not deciding that you're going to take a zero in that category. I mean, in the Barf League, which is the Bay Area Roto fantasy league that I run in San Francisco, I punted OBP last year. It's an OBP league. It's something I don't usually do. Well, I end up finishing second in the league in on-base percentage while punting it. And that's something that can happen. And I'm aiming to finish somewhere middle of the pack because of, you know, the flukiness of some rate stats. But at the end of the day, you know, if I finish towards the bottom, I've accounted for it. But if I finish towards the top, I've now put myself in a position to dominate a league like I did in the Barf League last year.
Andrew, I'm curious. First of all, since I have very limited experience with fantasy hockey, is fantasy hockey a punt category style setup as well? And have you had luck punting, quote-unquote, punting categories or not paying attention to categories? Punting might be the wrong word, actually.
Well, punting's, first of all, fantasy hockey is a very different beast because the stats used from league to league are extremely different. Especially as we move forward, easy older style leagues that we're using things like penalty minutes and plus minus. And then in fantasy hockey especially, you know, things like analytics have really taken a jump forward. So you see a lot of things like Corsi metrics, which is shots on goal for and against averaged out, move forward and start to make their way into fantasy leagues. So it'd be like Corsi would almost be the equivalent of having WAR exist as a stat in fantasy baseball, which would be interesting, I think, to some extent, but I digress. As far as punting, I mean you always kind of have to do it, right? And it's just a matter of kind of doing it intelligently in my eyes. So, I mean, punting saves being the perfect example. I play in a saves plus holds league. Actually, they're not combined, they're separated. And I always punt saves because closers come at such a higher cost than their setup guys do. So you might as well take the setup guy who might, you know, a Chris Devensky or an Andrew Miller, take the extra strikeouts, take the extra innings, and not worry about saves and move forward from there because you're getting more than one category at the same time.
Well, yeah, I think the high quality holds guy in a format like that too can also become someone who helps you in saves. So it's kind of like a built-in fallback if you can get the best sort of middle relief guys.
Yeah, and to some extent, the great thing about the setup guys is that they're truly a dime a dozen. One gets injured, you know, you go do a sort by K per nine, look at the innings, and pick out your next guy. Even in a 15-team league, they're not that hard to come by.
Well, I've had a tendency to have to chase saves over the years, so I remember these fly-by-night guys that just got, you know, just get the smallest cup of coffee as a closer, and they just can't handle it, etc., you know. And people are always, coming out of the woodworks for sure when it comes to those categories. But I thought it was worthwhile to mention because not only do we have a big variance in the ball itself, some trends like Andrew spoke of, the stolen bases going down, but we also have some interesting individual situations going on as far as, if there's going to be a humidor in Arizona and, the fact that seemingly every year with the stadiums are getting smaller. I mean, it allows them to add seating in the outfield, et cetera, if they can move in the walls, which they can't do in San Francisco, unfortunately for Justin. So I think that's why they're never going to have another major league actual hitter decide to come there and hit, which is a discussion for another day. But as sort of like a teacher would do in a lesson, I tried to pick out some players for us to talk about, and I tried to pick out players that would be as hard to predict as almost anyone in Major League Baseball. And so after we discuss these players, I'm going to ask the gentleman here to give us a rating between 1 and 5 about how unpredictable the players are that we're going to speak of. And first, we're going to start with Mr. Dewhurst here, and we're going to talk about a player that I know a lot about because he, although he came up in the Angels organization, he was a Brewer in his formative years as a major leaguer. And so I know a lot about the ins and outs of his growth. And that is one, Gene Segura, who I know a lot of fantasy people were really frustrated with in the middle of last year because it seemed like he was hitting mostly all singles and he was very batting average based, although he did turn it around a little bit late in the season. Andrew, how do you feel about Gene Segura going into the year?
I like Segura. I think I was the high man in the Mason mocks on Segura. He does have, like many players, it seems the biggest thing to predict with him is his health. And if anyone, and I think really if we're trying to look at, if we're expecting to get the Arizona Diamondback Gene Segura in Seattle, I think we're looking in the wrong place. That being said, I think the AL West is a nice place to be a hitter right now. In spite of some of the pitcher friendly parks, some of the pitching staffs in the West right now are shaping up to be pretty dreadful. When you take a look at the Texas Rangers, you take a look at the Angels rotation is a lot of hope, but not a lot of substance right now. As it looks like almost all six guys in their rotation could all be on the DL for any extended period of time, it would seem, as all of them have injury history. Oakland's always young, so on and so forth. I think Segura is a guy that you can target at shortstop to try to get some average in steals if that's something you're looking for. But I think there's also now a significant amount of concern with those steals as to how much they'll get limited if D. Gordon's hitting in front of them, as they're not going to probably do a lot of double steals.
Well, that's a really curious concept, and I saw that in your notes that you sent to me. And I don't know how to feel about that because I don't feel like we worried so much about Jose Peraza being with Billy Hamilton, and that's as close to an equivalent matchup as we can. So maybe we were wrong by doing that. So I guess that's something Justin can comment on as well, if he feels like there's any correlation there. I have a tendency to dismiss that correlation and think that they'll probably sort of run in their own right. But how do you feel about Gene Segura there, Justin?
I feel totally fine about Gene Segura. I think Seattle's lineup is still very strong. I know Andrew has mentioned maybe a little bit of feeling unsure about the whole situation with D. Gordon batting leadoff. I think Segura will find his spots to steal. You know, maybe it's not a 30 stolen base season like we saw 2 years ago from him, but I mean he's been pretty stable in terms of stolen base production over the course of his major league career. Since 2013, he's stolen at least 20 bases in every season. Stole 22 last year and did that in only 125 games. You got to think that he's going to steal that in a full slate of games next year. You're not having to pay a huge amount for him. He's shown the ability to hit home runs. Even though he only hit 11 last year, I think there's a lot of reasons to really like Gene Segura and the situation he's in. I mean, that Mariners lineup is pretty well packed with some great power behind him. Cano, Cruz, Seager, if Haniger can show what he showed in brief stretches last year, Zunino was great last year. I mean, he's gonna score a lot of runs, and I think he's still going to steal, a fair amount of bases where... And considering where he's going in drafts, I don't think he is an overpay by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, it's funny that you mention it because I don't have your notes in front of me, Andrew. But do you have the ADP from the Mason mocks for Gene Segura handy?
I do. He was sitting at 52.
And I think that's a relatively fair price. I'm going to pose a different position on this, if you will. And that's, I thought Segura was fairly unpredictable, and you guys don't seem to be hinting towards that. And some of that comes from this. His home runs since being a full-time player, he had 12 his first year, 5 the second year, 6 the third year, followed by 20 home runs, which was 2016, followed by 11 home runs, which was this past season. You know, and I'm asking the question that now that he's going to be 28 years old, do we think he's become a consistent player? And I'm posing the question on if the power variance is all because of the park factor. He's also a guy who his two down years were marred by a couple of things. Was marred by the personal tragedy of him losing a child, which, you know, us being parents, we certainly have sort of a soft spot for him trying to go through that to begin with. But he also got really pull happy and struggled with his swing in those two seasons following what was a great rookie season. He had a lot of infield hits his rookie season, and while he hasn't slowed down per se, he slowed down enough that the infield hits stopped after his first year in Milwaukee. Was not a regular thing like it was in his rookie season. And I have some trepidation about if he's somebody that we can trust now, and if those two bad years, which I believe are 2014 and 2015, are stuff that you really don't have to worry about anymore. I do think that shortstop has gotten top heavy enough that I was surprised to see 52 as an ADP. That seems a little bit high for me. But part of that is my personal penchant for thinking that some of the lower level shortstops, the Ozzie Albies, mm-hmm. and Mr. Arcia in Milwaukee, a lot of these shortstops I think are pretty decent flyers. So my tendency is to wait at shortstop compared to other positions, which is odd traditionally, because traditionally shortstop has been a very difficult place to find offense. But I pose now that I believe that a shortstop is better than second base by a long shot. So you have some opposing views there. So I put in my vote for the predictability factor, as I'm going to call it.
I think I want to kind of like just pick apart your argument a little bit, not a huge amount. One of the things you mentioned, he did lose a child while in Milwaukee and really appeared to struggle on the field at the same time. And I think we have to look at his numbers and go, okay, 2000, we should be throwing out 2014 and 2015 for off the field issues. I mean, we have to remember these guys aren't like machines. They don't just produce statistics at the tip of a keyboard or something like that. These are real life human beings. And like you mentioned, we're all three of us are parents, and couldn't imagine to have to go through what he went through. In that time in Milwaukee. So I'm willing to just throw out those numbers and look at 2013, 2016, and 2017. That's a 3-year, sample over the course of 5 seasons. For the most part, a lot of what he was doing is pretty stable, especially if you look at just 2016, 2017. Strikeout rate within, a tenth of a hundredth of a percentage point of each other. Walk rate, right, the same walk rate. He played less games, so obviously, the numbers went down a little bit. But, I mean, it's pretty much right in line with what he did in 2016. He's hitting for a high average. He doesn't walk very much, but, he gets, because he's got a high contact rate, he's going to get on base. And I don't think there's any reason to doubt that he isn't a stable commodity.
All right, so with one being the most predictable and 5 being the most unpredictable, what's your rating between 1 and 5 for Gene Segura?
Give him a 4.
1 would be the most predictable.
Oh, sorry, I'll give him a 2 then.
Okay, and how about you, Andrew? How do you feel between a 1 and a 5?
I'm going to be a fence sitter on this one. I'm going to go 3. And that, for me, the predictability is actually more about games played than it is about the counting categories that he's going to put up.
I think that's fair.
Okay, well, I'm going to go 3.5 because I do think he's one of the more predictable players on this player list for sure. And I'll use that as a segue to go on to our next player, who's a guy I was heavily invested in last year. And Justin Mason applauded my pick when I got this guy in NFBC last year, which I'm finding is sort of a death knell. He was also a big fan of my Noah Syndergaard pick. Let's talk about Ian Desmond and the former Nat, former Ranger. And now he's in Colorado, which seems like just the best thing you could imagine. I just want to mention that in Texas in 2016, he had one home run in every 31 plate appearances. And for some reason in Colorado, he had one home run in every 53 plate appearances. So it turned out to be quite a difference. Let's start with you, Justin. How do you feel about the guy that you applauded me for drafting last year bouncing back?
I think there's a real chance he does bounce back. Maybe not to what we thought we might get from him in 2016, but to being a pretty usable fantasy player. I mean, he missed the majority of the season, or not the majority, but a fair chunk of the season. He only got to play in 95 games because of injury. The injury started off early in the season. I believe it was a wrist thing, which can always sap power. And for the most part, otherwise, he was somewhat in line with what he does. He's walking, 6.5% of the time, striking out 23% of the time. He at least stole bases, in 95 games. He stole 15 bags, which I think is pretty nice and reassuring. I think an offseason to get healthy, he's going to come back and be full strength. And I think this is a guy that we can expect to maybe go 2020 with a pretty decent average in Coors.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly always tantalizing. I've been on record that I don't really understand why Colorado accumulates outfielders like most human beings accumulate socks. And that's something that I've been critical of them, although, I've been more supportive of their pitching than other people in the fantasy industry. Andrew, how do you feel about Ian Desmond? Do you see any cause for concern, or he's starting to get a little long in the tooth for somebody who was a shortstop? I remember when Derek Jeter was, into his early 30s, everyone said, well, shortstops are terrible at age 30. And for some reason, I still think of Desmond as a shortstop. How do you feel about him?
Desmond's another guy that I like. He's going to produce good value, especially given his current, his 124 ADP in the Mason mocks. And he's actually more durable than you might think. He's been played 150 games or more in 6 of the last 8 seasons, which is not necessarily how I think of Ian Desmond. I think of him as oft injured, but the data clearly shows otherwise. And I think if you're looking at Ian Desmond, as Justin alluded to, you should be looking to him for steals because that's what's been consistent in his game. He's kind of hovered around the 20 home run mark for much of the last 5 years. But I think if you buy him for steals and you get the home runs, then you're going to be in the right place. And given the cost, and you're likely to see multi-position eligibility from him, as it looks like he's projected to play left field for the Rockies right now, according to Roster Resource. But I would be surprised if he didn't see more significant time at first base as well.
Well, I think what I find to be, a bit turbulent with Desmond was his batting average. He went a couple years where he was hitting around 300, and everyone kind of thought that's what you were going to get. And then all of a sudden the bottom would drop out in the batting average itself. And I don't know how much danger there is exactly, but the outfield is still pretty overloaded in Colorado, which, of course, is why Andrew's talking about him being eligible at first base. And in the offseason, if they don't add a first baseman, maybe they go back to what plan A was when they signed Desmond, which was him being a first baseman. But you also have to see how well it works out.
I don't think the outfield is as outloaded as maybe we think it is. I mean, right now they have a projected outfield of obviously Charlie Blackmon in center, and Andrew mentioned Desmond in left. Parra is projected in right field. I don't think they have any issue with playing Desmond over Parra, if that came to. Ramel Tapia has not shown that he is yet ready to be a full-time major league outfielder. David Dahl cannot stay healthy. So it's not like, I mean, yeah, they've got some young guys in the minors, but or working their way up to the majors, but these aren't guys who are ready to unseat a guy like Ian Desmond. And I think maybe that they're more entranced by the idea of playing Ryan McMahon, who kind of reestablished a lot of his falling prospect stock. So I think McMahon will probably play a lot of first, and you'll see a guy like Desmond stay in the outfield at the expense of Tapia and Dahl. And if Tapia and Dahl prove that they're readied for every day at bats, I think that will come at the expense of Geraldo Parra.
Well, I think some of the confusion for me in the outfield comes in the fact that, you know, in back-to-back years, they added Parra long-term, and they added Desmond. And then, you know, that was when we felt like the prospect status was especially high for David Dahl, as we speak of. And Tapia has had his big boosters, people that were well behind him as being an excellent prospect at the major league level as well. So there is some that we need to see exactly, if these guys take the next step in development or if they don't. That's certainly one of the variables at hand. And the other variable at hand is if Colorado is going to relatively stand pat this offseason, or if they're going to do what they've done in the past, which is they seemingly want to add a bat or two, and we have to see which bat that is. Parra is sort of an odd player, and he's a factor here. He's an odd player because he's an incredible defensive player, and his offense seems to sort of wax and wane, meaning that, you know, he's had peaks and valleys in his offense. But he was really good last year. And I can tell you from his time in Milwaukee, too, he's one of the – I really wanted the Brewers to re-sign Parra because he is a much, much, much better reality player than he is a fantasy player. Because he incredible defense, great arm. The bats are better sometimes than they look on paper. So it will be very curious to see how it develops. And we also have to see if Ian Desmond goes into one of his slumps to start the season and if that sort of endangers him. Because he has had some slumps throughout his career.
Place like Colorado, though, Desmond is not going to get sat unless he's injured. The contract dictates he gets playing time. I mean, let's just be honest. At the end of the day, you know, a guy who's making $22 million this year in Colorado is going to play. They're going to let him play through things, even if he's struggling.
Well, looks like I'm running perfect here on me thinking these guys are unpredictable, and you guys not feeling so.
We'll get there with the next guy.
All right, I suppose we will, and we have a backstory for him as well. But why don't we? I want to do this little grading system so I can come up with a score, an unpredictability score for these guys. So let's start with you this time, Andrew. Between 1 and 5, 1 being most predictable and 5 being crazy unpredictable, how do you feel about Ian Desmond?
He's a 2 in my eyes.
Yeah, he's a 2.
And how about you, Justin?
He's a 2. He's a 2 for me. I mean, especially if you. The batting average, I think, is a little bit unpredictable, and I think that's what keeps him from being a pretty, a virtually really stable commodity. But I think at the end of the day, especially if you're going with like my strat, like Ian Desmond is the perfect guy for my punting batting average strategy, because you know you're going to get the counting categories from him. It's just a matter of where the hell his average is going to be. Is it going to be the low end, the 233 you were hitting in 2015, or is it going to be like one of the high ends where he was hitting 280 or 290? So, he's a perfect kind of player because I think people will discount him with the injury, and he's going to come at a really nice rate this year.
Yeah, and I think one statistic to keep an eye on with Desmond and his age that may point you to where he's trending is keeping an eye on his BABIP, as he's always been a really high BABIP guy with 328 career average. So I think if you start seeing that BABIP go down, that's probably the time where you need to start wondering if you need to move off of Desmond as well.
Well, I think Ian Desmond is a little more unpredictable than you guys do. So where I gave Gene Segura a 3.5, I have him at a 4. And I'm pretty – I have more concern. It's more of a cumulative thing than one thing. But I do think I'm curious as to how he's going to age now he's getting towards his middle 30s, which sometimes is – seems like it's more difficult in the non-PED stages of the game that we're in, thankfully. All right, to the gentleman that Justin is pointing to, so I will go to him first here. And there's an interesting backstory. Justin and I went back and forth last year before the season started. I thought Eric Thames was a really good risk at the late ADPs, relatively late ADPs that you could get him in a lot of drafts last year. I also believed in Travis Shaw. So those two guys really worked out for me overall. But Eric Thames turned out to be, you know, really difficult to hold on to through the middle part of the season. He had a slight uptick at the end. He's a very, very likable character. When he signed in Milwaukee, I remember him saying, you know, the city stands for beer and he loved beer. And it was a lot of likable. He was when he was on... you know, MLB Network last year, you know, they loved him. He's got a great personality. I did hear that he had the shortest average distance of home runs of any player in the majors last year, which would surprise a lot of people. But I remember a lot of wall scrapers that he hit towards center field. So maybe that was part of it. So, Justin, do you feel like there's any rhyme or reason to Mr. Thames, who had a .247 batting average but a .347 OBP?
Well, I think maybe the whole likes to drink beer type thing kind of reflected in his game, because he started off, you know, the season or the night doing really well and pounding them and seemed to be on fire, and by the end it got pretty ugly. So I think part of it was you know, pitchers maybe catching, you know, some holes and him having a hard time adjusting. I mean, I think the nice part is, even if you kind of discount the 11 home runs he hit in the first month of the season, he still hit at least 3 to 4 home runs every month, which means I think he will continue to be a reliable source of power. I just have no idea how we project his batting average going forward. It just, to me, I think there is a huge amount of variance. I think that may mean I own him in a number of leagues, because like I said, I tend to discount that anyway, so I'll kind of project it to be somewhat lower and you know, probably actually where he ended up in like the 246, 247 range. And anything again on top of that is gravy. But I think, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit I was wrong on Eric Thames. Now, I think, you know, maybe I wasn't as wrong as some people would like to make me out to be, but because he wasn't Barry Bonds after that first month. But I think at the end of the day, you know, those who took him outside of the top, you know, 120 picks profited fairly well from it.
Yeah, he was definitely not. He
didn't steal, though. What happened to those stolen bases you guys were supposed to get?
And he didn't look like he was running very well for most of the year. He did have some leg problems early in the year. And when he played the outfield, it was pretty painful to watch. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about that.
Which is Andrew, fine, what are your they've got enough outfielders. He should just stick at first.
Yeah, well, at least now they do. I mean, the rumor mill has them trading an outfielder or two, but I'm pretty dubious of that happening. Andrew, what are your feelings about the guy who he came over with the nickname of God? That's what they called him in Korea, was God.
Well, I mean, he's not a guy that I'm going to be really high on. Because I think when you do subtract those 11 home runs from March and April, you could be looking at just a league average power bat, given that league average last year was about 22. So, like, I think if you're looking at that as being league average, I'm not really sure what you're buying. I mean, he's 31. If his second half is any indication, he did struggle to adjust to how pitchers approached him. And that's going to be a really big part of what I think we need to watch for him in the first half or in the first quarter of the season. Is he making the adjustments to stay as a major league hitter? I would suggest that that might have been a problem for why he didn't stick in the majors initially and ended up going to Korea. This is truly the kind of guy that I find hard to predict because we just don't have sample. Without sample, I think projection and prediction is almost impossible at times.
Well, I do appreciate the analogy that Justin made, taking his season worth of work and, making it analogous to a night out drinking. And the one thing I would say is if he was somebody who drank like that and got really drunk, you would hate to see him be belligerent because he's an absolute beast of a human being.
Yes, he is.
He's the absolute wrong guy that you would not want to be in the wrong mood and accidentally, slap him in the face or something. But his personality speaks to the fact that, that he seems like a really nice, easygoing guy, but he seems like a hard worker and a really good teammate. And all these human factors I want to factor in and say, hey, maybe he's going to make the adjustment because, you could see the frustration building as he was struggling in the middle months of the season last year. So I do think it's going to be very interesting to see how it works for him. He does have outfield eligibility, which I always, this time of year especially, I'm thinking about NFBC-style drafts, and that extra eligibility matters a lot when you can't pick up players during the season. So I will start out this time, and I will say, I do want to mention this. Do you guys realize that he had 31 home runs, but he only had 63 RBIs? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty crazy since he batted in the middle of the lineup a lot of last year. Although Craig Counsell is not known for keeping the lineup static for very long. So anyway, I'll start the unpredictable factor here, and I'm going to put him at a 4.5 because I, relatively speaking, I don't really have any idea what to expect. And how about you, Justin? How do you feel about his predictability?
Yeah, I think the average concerns and what his strikeout rate might look like, especially against, he really struggled last year against left-handed pitching. Struck out almost 37% of the time. I think I'm going to go with 4, but it's probably closer to the 4.5 you're going with.
All right, and then how about you, Andrew?
I'm in the same place. I'm looking at a 4. I'm not really sure what we're going to get. And I see him. I feel like he's a player that we want to pull for all the reasons that you stated, Chuck. Seems like a good guy. Works hard. But at the same time, I'm just really concerned about his second half, as well as kind of what's happened in his career as a whole.
Well, over time, I'll try and not bring up so many people with Brewer ties because I have a lot of stories about them, and you guys might tire. Our listeners might tire of it. I do remember one of my favorite Eric Thames moments last year was when he was hitting all those home runs. He was getting drug tested, random drug tested, like three times a week.
Yeah,
like 3 times a week, something ridiculous. And his statement to the media that he has plenty of urine and plenty of blood was one of the funniest moments of the year to me because we all know that random testing is not random.
I'm a professional addiction specialist and addiction counselor, and if you're gonna drop urinalysis on someone, the best time to drop another one is right after, because usually drug addicts go, oh man, I just got drug tested. I'm not gonna get drug tested for a while. I can go out and get fucked up or whatever. So I'm sure that's what MLB. I'm sure he's not the only one that gets hit with like multiple in a row. I'm sure they come in kind of waves and things like that. But yeah, you're right. That was probably the best line I've heard in a long time in the regards to drug testing.
Yeah, it really announced, and it's one thing I really like, and I've noticed this over time. Okay, like Ryan Braun, never really came out and was outraged by what was going on, and that was a sign that something really had happened there. And
well, obviously something had happened. I mean, dude got like a FedEx employee fired.
Exactly. But I mean, as the process was going on, he never was asking the right questions or reacting the way that you would expect somebody to react when they're innocent.
No, and, he questioned the process rather than the results. I mean, that's saying, hey, listen, I did this, but you didn't catch me fairly.
And Eric Thames coming out and just announcing to the world, because he's built like a beast, just announcing to the world that, hey, you know, come get a sample whenever you want one, I thought was a really good sign. But let's move on to another player that I find really unpredictable. And part of it comes from the fact that this velocity has been all over the board and he struggled with injuries. And I also want to note that the Royals are really getting ripped apart for, you know, losing free agents, which they haven't lost them yet. But for all intent purposes, it certainly looks like they're going to lose a ton of free agents this offseason. But they did invest long term in Alex Gordon, which I hated at the time and still hate. That's why I don't think you ever sign players on WAR. WAR is the worst thing you can sign players on. Okay, on their WAR statistic. But they also invested long-term in Danny Duffy, trying to have a base for their pitching. And Danny Duffy is 28 years old. He had a 3.81 ERA last year. He's pitched 180 innings in one season already. So there's a lot of things to like on the surface about Danny Duffy. But his strikeout rate plummeted last year a little bit. And I'm really curious as to what Andrew thought when he was studying and what his first thought was about Danny Duffy as a fantasy value going forward.
Yeah, so the thing I like the most about Danny Duffy is that he pitches in the dumpster fire that we know as the American League Central. Outside of the Indians, I'm not sure that there's you might struggle to put up a major league lineup between the other four teams.
Oh, come on. Minnesota's not that bad.
Sorry. that's true. But between, I mean, mostly if you look at the Royals, the Tigers, and the White Sox, things aren't really pretty. But statistically, the ground ball percentage is really something that I worry about. I mean, he's a career 37.3 ground ball percentage. That's a really high that means he's given up a lot of fly balls. And in today's era where we continue to see large amounts of home runs go up year after year, I think that presents you with a significant amount of risk. And at the same time, I mean, his strikeout numbers were down a bit last year, but still up from 2015 and 2014. So, I mean, you can live with that 8 K per nine. But I mean, as a whole commodity, I'm not sure I'm really interested in Danny Duffy, based on his actual skills, but in the right place because of who much of his opponents are going to be, allows me to buy into him maybe a little bit more.
Well, I do think he's really fascinating to think about going forward here, because I think people are naturally going to dismiss the Royals when they lose these players, and their lineup looks really, really horrible on paper right now. Really horrible. But I like to say that a lot of times in these, you know, when you get down to ground zero for some of these teams, that sometimes there's fantasy gems in the rough. And I'm curious, I think it's going to be fascinating to hear what Justin thinks. We could hear almost anything on this guy. What do you think of Danny Duffy, Justin?
Well, I'm currently watching the video of him getting a DUI at Burger King. For those who don't know, he passed out while waiting for his food at the drive-thru while he was awaiting elbow surgery at the end of last season, which is never like, don't get me wrong, I make light of it, especially in, you know, considering the fact I'm a recovering alcoholic. I work in the field of addiction, so I have memories of doing things like that, though never at a Burger King. I'm more of a Carl's Jr. type guy. But at the end of the day, I love Danny Duffy's skill set. I love the park he pitches in. Andrew's right, that division is not very good. And even the best teams in that division that he would be facing don't necessarily like jump off the pages to me as extremely scary. For me, it's health. I don't know what to make of his health. And I mean, he ended last season on the DL because of an elbow issue. They removed loose bodies from the elbow. You know, I think that you can probably attribute that to some of the drop in velocity and in strikeout rate. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to get that back right away. So I think Danny Duffy, for me, is a guy that I'm watching coming into spring training. And I want to see what, you know, what the data shows in terms of where his velocity is sitting, you know, what his control looks like. So if I've got like an early draft, for instance, Matt Thompson and I are part of the RotoWire Dynasty draft or league that they started up. And we're going to start drafting like right after Christmas. It's a slow draft. And it's a really deep draft. And so we're going to start up really early. Danny Duffy will not be on my ranks, you know, or my draft list. I will completely take him off because it's just not worth taking the chance on someone like that in that deep of a league drafting that early. So if you're in a position like that where you're drafting an NFBC league or something like that super early, then I think you have to say you're not going to touch Danny Duffy unless there is an extreme discount, which I think we've seen in a lot of drafts. But for the most part, I think I've got to wait until I see him pitch.
Well, I think he's sort of the ultimate high-risk, high-reward guy.
Yes, totally.
In lay middle. Because that one stretch, the stretch in 2016, he looked Paxton-esque for a good chunk of the second half of the season. He started off the year like basically as a reliever. And when they needed starters, they went to him. You know, that 9.42 K per nine was pretty outstanding that year, and it really helped a lot of people. And like I said, I do think the Royals are going to be overlooked as an entity. There's going to be a lot of people expecting to come out of drafts without a Royal. And he reminds me so much of, you know, Danny Salazar, you know, that type of maybe Danny Salazar probably had a little more strikeout upside even than Duffy did.
For sure.
But Danny Salazar, like, you don't know, you know, if you get 85% of them, how much, you know, how that could be decent. If you got 95% of them, that could be really good. And if you got him at his healthiest, all of a sudden you got a steal. So I think that's really interesting. He's one of the guys that I definitely equate with him, with, you know, his kind, the kind of upside that he has. And the Royals really need him. They don't have enough depth, you know, Jake Junis, et cetera, trying to fill out their rotation. The Royals really need him, and that can lead to a few extra innings over time when they're just trying to give a break to what could be a pretty tired bullpen. So he's one of the toughest players for me to put a finger on. So I'm going to put his unpredictability factor at 5. Andrew, how do you feel about, between 1 and 5, how do you feel about Mr. Duffy?
I think 5's probably the right place. I mean, you look over his total body of work, there's not a lot of consistency there to be found. I worry about a guy who's seen 180, like 180 innings as his career, and he's hasn't been within almost 30 innings of that ever again in another season. So I think he's definitely that risk reward type player.
And Justin, are you in line with us here?
I'm in line with you guys. I will say that one of the reasons he hasn't seen that, you know, I mean, outside of last year, the reason he hasn't seen that, you know, those big inning workloads is because he has pitched out of the bullpen on a number of occasions. I really like the stuff, and you know, there, I will have a share as long as he looks decent, but I mean, this is about as volatile as you get because we really don't know. I mean, if he comes out in spring training and he's throwing 91, we're gonna have a problem.
Yeah, it is gonna be very he's gonna be very worthwhile to track exactly where he's at. You know, he's proven that he can get by at like 80% with some guile. I mean, mm-hmm. he does He does have an arsenal. He has a good arsenal for a left-handed pitcher, which is why the Royals were interested in extending him long-term. So he's going to be one of the biggest biggest wild cards that you can imagine on draft day, in my opinion. The next guy I want to talk about is the one guy I have never, ever seen play basketball that's a baseball player, but I just know he's good. Like, I bet you this guy's got an amazing jump shot. I would not want to play basketball against this guy under any circumstances. And that is the still just 25-year-old Taiwan Walker, who was part of the sort of miracle staff put together last year by the Arizona Diamondbacks. A lot of people are predicting regression for the Diamondbacks, and I'm wondering how comfortable we're going to feel about Taiwan Walker going forward. Really interesting. His home run rate is really interesting, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But first, I want to hear what Justin's thoughts are on Taiwan Walker.
You know, I think what he did last year was unexpected. I think what he showed was maybe a lot of the promise that people thought that they were getting with him when they drafted him in dynasty leagues. As a minor league ball player, and he just, everything seemed to click. I mean, there definitely were some, maybe some luckiness to him. Both his FIP and ex-FIP are markedly higher than his ERA, but, I mean, he struck out, you know, the most amount of guys, or the career best rate at the major league level. He limited the home runs. I think if the humidor has the desired effect that Arizona is looking for, then I think Walker could actually be a guy that repeats what he did last year. If it doesn't, then, you know, I think there is some regression due. I think the humidor could save him from that, but I don't think he's getting enough credit for what he did last year in spite of, you know, dealing with some injury stuff in 2016. I think he was a pretty nice pitcher, and I think you're going to get him at a pretty decent rate.
Yeah, I'm fascinated on how this works going forward. I was very, very critical, and it appears that I was wrong, very critical of him at his early stages in his career in Seattle. At one point, announcing that Jimmy Nelson was a far better pitching prospect than Taiwan Walker, which they've both had some good stretches now. Andrew, why don't you include the ADP, because this is an interesting ADP guy. Did you look up his Mason Mock ADP? Because I'm curious about Taiwan Walker, and if not, maybe Justin can get it for us. But what do you think about Taiwan Walker this year?
His ADP in the Mason Mock's 220. And if we haven't plugged this enough, you can find those mocks at Fangraphs. I love him at 220. Because he's definitely going to be an upside guy. I think he could see as high if he can stay healthy and continue to progress forward. I think he could be up to an SP2. He had a 8.35 K per nine, which was great last year. They bring in the humidor in Arizona, and you could see his often troublesome home run per nine numbers drop. Which was, a terrible 1.81 in Seattle the year prior, which is, when you consider the park factor on that, is really something else. But I think we also have to give credit to the Diamondbacks where it's due, and making a pitching coach change is often something that does spark a real change with pitchers, often for the better, right? When we think of some organizations that do a great job developing pitchers, and I think many others obviously do, we look at who the pitching coach was that was tied to it. Many have always, like, he's got the stuff, he's got the arsenal. It's just a matter of putting everything together. And I'm willing to buy in on that is, you know, at his age is starting to come together, and he's going to be a great value, especially if you're getting him around 220, pick 220 in your draft.
Well, I'm a little bit more dubious. I do think that the home run rate is a little crazy that it went from 1.81 in Seattle to 0.97 in Arizona, just because of the park factors like you guys were pointing to. I do think 220 is a nice is a very interesting draft value for Taiwan Walker, because it's still a National League team, even though they play in Arizona, which is not Colorado, but, you know, some people call it Coors Field South. So it's got some ties to it, I guess. But the point being is that he still gets to pitch a lot of extra games in Los Angeles and in San Francisco. Those are certainly very friendly parks to pitch in. And he still gets to, you know, still gets to pitch to the pitcher in the NL. So I think that helps as well. You know, it seems like the projection systems are not real big on him. They're sort of calling for a regression. And some people have this idea in their head that the Diamondbacks and or some people with both, I guess, and the Rockies are going to fall back to the pack this year. You know, with all kudos to Matt Thompson out there, I'd like to say that, you know, an organization usually will get a bump after losing, you know, diminishing Tony La Russa's role. I think that would probably help most organizations. So it'll be pretty interesting because the steamer and the depth charts are calling for serious regression for Taiwan Walker. But, you know, he's just 25 years old, and I think the foot injury that he had a couple years ago got people really down on him. He pitched through a foot injury in Seattle. So I don't think I did as good picking out an unpredictable player as I wanted to.
I think he is super unpredictable. I mean, I know I said, you know, nice things about Taiwan Walker, but I think at the end of the day, it's not necessarily a big deal with how unpredictable he may be, because the draft cost associated with it is virtually nothing. I mean, like Andrew mentioned, he's going around pick 220. That, to me, you know, that's in the same area of Blake Snell, which another guy who could have been on this list, Eduardo Rodriguez, Patrick Corbin, another guy who could have been on this list, Sean Manaea. I mean, these are kind of lottery ticket upside plays, and Taiwan Walker is a guy who has a ton of upside, but unlike some of the other guys, he's actually shown that upside at the major league level, you know, over the course of a full season. I mean, he had a fantastic year last year, and so I have no problem with him being where he's or going where he's being taken, and I think he's kind of a steal at that point, but that doesn't make him any less of a kind of a wild card or a lottery ticket type player. I mean, if he was to regress right back to where he was in, you know, 2004 or 2015, you know, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but I'm willing to take the gamble that he's going to keep at least 80 to 90% of his gains from last year, because the draft cost associated is so low.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I expect us in the offseason to cover a lot of these pitchers that are in this tier, because with the offensive outburst that we had with all the home runs given up last year, what you really have is you have the aces, and then you have this huge chunk of players that certainly goes through Taiwan Walker, which you're like, well, there's ability there and there's upside there. There's really no doubts about it. There's even pedigree there. He was highly touted at when he was a prospect. But you have to wonder exactly how consistent you can hope him being going forward. I do think his age is really a factor that helps tip in his favor to me. And like I said, I mean, the injury that he had at the major league level was a foot injury, so I'm not as concerned about his durability as maybe I would be otherwise.
It's somewhat shocking that he's only 25 years old to me.
Yeah, he looks older than that too, which is surprising because he's of the culture that, you know, generally speaking, you know, they have people have a tendency to look very young when they're of the persuasion that Taiwan Walker is.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have probably left it alone too. Yeah. But I don't think it's a slight to say that black men have a tendency to look very young. I think that's a compliment. I don't mean it in a bad way. So, anyway, the point being is that I'm going to put him well below Danny Duffy on the predictability scale, which Danny Duffy's going a lot higher. So I'm going to put him at a 2.5 for predictability. How about you, Justin?
Well, I'm going to start out by saying that I don't think any pitcher deserves a one in terms of predictability, because I think any pitcher can fall off the mat at any point. So I'm going to say he's a three. I don't think that he's particularly very predictable, but I also don't think he – actually, you know what? I'm going to go with a four, actually. I think he's really unpredictable. I don't know what the hell we're going to get out of Taijuan Walker next year, but I'm willing to gamble on the upside of it. It's the only difference.
Yeah, these predictions, and a lot of times the evaluations that we have on players, some of it is just gut. There's no doubt about it, you know. And we don't have a significant track record of success with Taijuan Walker.
Well, I think I'm feeling pretty good if Taijuan Walker is like my fifth or sixth pitcher.
Yeah, and at 220, you could very well be there, depending on how mm-hmm. you decide to structure your rosters. How about you, Andrew?
I'm going to go with a three, but I'm going to note this, and that I feel like I'm probably in a very similar spot to Justin, is that I really don't know what we're going to get out of him. But one thing I'm going to do after we get done talking about this is I'm going to actually go back and watch mm-hmm. the game tape. So I'm really interested to see what changed for him between 2015, 2016, and 2017. Because I'm not going to be surprised if you see significant mechanic changes between 2016 and 2017. And maybe it's some of this also has to do with game calling as well. But I really want to understand what the difference was in the home run per nine, because I think previous to last year, we would have expected that to stay high or even possibly spike further.
Well, and I think part of it too was, I mean, Chuck mentioned he had an injured foot, and it was his landing leg. So,
for sure.
You know, and if you're every time you're throwing a pitch and landing on your foot, if it's hurting, that's obviously going to change the way you at least think about a pitch.
Yeah. And your probably, yeah.
Yeah, and your mechanics, your release point. So I'm sure it has something to do with that. I just want to mention before we kind of move off of him and wrap this up, you know, in terms of in-season volatility last year, of his 28 starts, he only had, I think, 5 starts with more than 3 earned runs.
That is that is very telling statistic of exactly how good he was last year. So, you know, you also run risk with a guy like this of, you know, getting sort of Moneyball-esque, sort of as far as, you know, he's got the body type. He, you know, he looks durable. He looks athletic, which of course doesn't really add to predictability per se. You know, guys all the way back to, I'm going to prove my age again, all the way back to Oil Can Boyd and, you know, all the way through Chris Sale, they don't necessarily look like the body type that you think, you know, Tim Lincecum, to make it a San Francisco thing, you know, was excellent at the height of his career, despite, you know, looking like, you know, like he just got his driver's license, etc. I mean, there's definitely unpredictability within the stereotyping or the prototyping, if you will. But Taijuan Walker sort of has that look on the mound, like he could throw the fastball through your skull or wherever he wanted to, for some reason or another, to me anyway. So I do think he's going to be an interesting draft value outside of the top 200 for sure. And I'm also going to be definitely trying to have some shares of Taijuan Walker this year, which is a huge reach for where I was at one point, because I really had him as a failed prospect that I thought had gotten overhyped. But he did a lot of mind changing with me last year. So just sort of in summary, it sure seems like we find Eric Thames and Danny Duffy to be the most unpredictable players that we covered today, which isn't really too surprising, I guess, when you consider health and you consider sort of the track record and adjustments that we have to see out of Thames. But I wanted to point out to people through this episode that you're going to have to fight through this unpredictability, and you're going to have to sort of use your gut to get to a better spot, to where you're more comfortable with your draft prep going into the season, because it's going to be very difficult to put together a team this year where you're not going to have to put yourself out on a limb on four or five different roster spots, at least, perhaps well more than that with where we're at with starting pitching right now. So let's wrap this up. Andrew, why don't you again reiterate your Twitter handle for us and tell us anything else you're working on?
Sure. Again, you can find me at Andrew K. Dewhurst on Twitter. I really got to make that shorter and easier for people to find at some point. Otherwise, I'm doing weekly articles and podcasts for hockey, and looking forward to doing the show every Monday with you two.
All right, Justin, how about you, brother?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can also friend me on Facebook if you want. Just find me on there. I'm the guy with a really large beard. You can find all my work at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, and coming soon, some work over at Fantrax, where I will be where I'm in the process of putting together a pretty cool thing. I've been teasing it a lot. It's going to be a very, very large and intricate industry league that will have an associated podcast and probably some blog posts over there as well. It is going to be a whole lot of fun and a different than really anything you've seen in fantasy baseball in terms of industry leagues. Definitely go and check that kind of stuff out. I'll let people know when the podcast for that start. Just keep checking out all the great stuff at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Andrew released his first hockey podcast, which was fantastic. We have a whole bunch of baseball stuff coming up for next season. We're going to be doing podcasts every day for the first 30 days of the month doing team previews, or the first 30 days of the year doing team previews, as well as our prospect minutes, which we'll be bringing back with me and Matt. We're going to be putting together a draft guide, and then 4 to 5 podcasts a week after that, pretty much through the rest of the season. So definitely stick with us. Do not unsubscribe. Give us a rate and review. Get you to win some cool shit, including Listener League entries, and FWFB and other associated swag. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Well, Justin, I can tell you from our regular contact through podcasts and through FWFB that I know the rest of us all have a ton of respect for all the work that you put in recent years. And we're at some point we're going to have to spend some time talking to you about how you handle the newfound celebrity status that you've reached recently. I mean, I feel like it's going to get to the point where it's going to be tough for you to like walk into a sports bar without sort of being hassled by people for your excellent work and how much time and effort you put into not only FWFB but the other ventures that you're in. So we're very respectful of that, the rest of the FWFB guys for sure. I'm working on a draft prep article for for NFBC leagues, because I know a lot of you will be getting ready for those as well especially once we get to February and March. So I'm working on that article and trying to get back in the swing of putting out an article each week of note, is what I call it on the website itself. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I do comment a lot of commentary on sports in general. This morning I had an elongated conversation with someone how I don't think you're ever going to get concussions off the field in the NFL. So that was the kind of things that you can also feel free to tweet at me, and I will give you my 2 cents, and hopefully it's worth the full 2 cents. That would be an excellent performance from me. So anyway, thank you so much for the listen and the continued support that we get from the listeners. I love it when we do these off-season podcasts, because if a lot of you guys out there are like me, I'm constantly searching for new things to listen to with as much updated information and varying information than you hear everywhere else. And that will be one of the goals of the Monday podcast, to be talking about things that you don't necessarily hear on each of the, you're not going to hear the exact same podcast that you heard if you listen to one of the mainstream podcasts. So we hope to provide that for you. And this is sort of an ongoing venture, so we will try to fine-tune this the best that we can for you. We really appreciate Andrew for sneaking us in long term here. He's got to break away from his job to come and talk to me and Justin throughout the season. So his sacrifice is much appreciated as well. Thanks, everyone. This is episode 335. Signing off. We will be back to you soon. Not exactly this group until after the holidays, but we will talk to you as soon thereafter as we possibly can. Every night.